So welcome, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the final RM 103 conference call for Understand Legal Risk. And today I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the unceded territory of the Coast Salish people. So if you hear any noise in the background, I am in downtown Vancouver, and it's pretty noisy out there. So I just thought I'd let you know. Before we get into our call today, and while Tegan's joining the chat, I would like to remind you that the rules, regulations, constitutional provisions, legislative enactments, and judicial opinions on the matter of legal risk vary by jurisdiction. So in this learning event, we just provide a very brief introduction to legal risk. And if you need more help or an expert opinion, we strongly encourage that you consult the appropriate authorities or legal counsel in your own jurisdictions. I need to do that background because this is a legal risk. So that's setting an example, that's sort of a disclaimer in a way. So what we're going to do, Kelsey, if you're in the chat right now, do you mind just letting Tim know that there's who's on the call for me while I just start the... Because I'm holding my phone in one hand and I have my mouse in the other one, so that would be great. We're going to do a quick round of introductions, so we'll just go around and just confirm if you are, when you say who's on the call, just confirm if you are representing the plaintiff or the defense today. And so we'll go in the order that we joined the call. So we'll start with Kelsey and then Tegan, and then I'm not sure if Tim's on the call or not, or just in the chat. So you're on the call, Tim? Awesome. Okay, so this is Caroline. I'm here, and I'll be moderating the jury decision today. So there we go. Over to you, Kelsey, if you could just let us know if you are representing the plaintiff or the defense.
Kelsey, and I'm representing the plaintiff.
Awesome. And over to you, Tegan.
I'm Tegan, and I'm representing the defense.
Oh, good. We got one of each so far. And Tim, I know you might not be able to stay on the whole call, but if you wanted to let us know who you're representing as well, that would be great.
Yeah, it's Tim here, and I am representing defense as well.
Okay. So we've got different sides here, so that'll make it interesting. But before we jump into making our cases and deciding on a ruling, which is your RLA or required learning activity for this week, we're going to take a look at how liability can be escaped by transferring risk. So if you happen to have the presentation slides in front of you, I'm starting with slide 39, but if you don't, that's okay. I just would like to explain this last part of content to you. So slide 39 shows you that there's two main options for transferring risk. One is contracting out, and the other one is insurance. So contracting out means that somebody else delivers your activity, coordinates your event, looks after your facility or equipment. So Kelsey, your Real Leader program is a great example of transferring risk down the line. So, there could be Kelsey's Real Leader program, or maybe you rent a bus to transport, Tegan, I think you're back at Skookum Gym, but when you were there before, you used to tell us how, you guys would have transportation. So you might either use your own organization's vehicle, or you might rent out or have a driver or something like that. So those are examples of contracting out. People also contract out when they don't have the staff with required expertise, or you need somebody with a specific training and certification. So imagine you have fitness equipment, and we've talked about this before, that needs maintenance work doing on it. You need to make sure you have the person with the right certification, or a playground inspection needs to be done by somebody who's certified. So when you use, for those of you using a contractor or another organization and contracting out, want to make sure the person or group has their own liability insurance. So the one exception from those examples is RPA's Real Leader program. When it's an individual that RPA's contracting it out to, their insurance actually covers, RPA's insurance will cover that person. So, in other words, you have to make sure that there's liability insurance in place, because usually contracting out doesn't mean that your own organization's liability insurance will cover your contractors. I think RPAY is the only exception I've heard in that case. You also need to remember that if you own a facility and that activity is being run in your facility, even if you're contracting someone like a yoga instructor to come in, there's still a potential for owners and premises liability, like we talked about, I think, in week two. Another way is you can transfer some of your, not all, but certain operational risks to an insurance company through your liability insurance. So insurance is a really, really important risk management strategy in recreation and sport. It's getting more and more expensive, but we can't not do it because it's so important. You want to make sure that you have insurance in place before you open a facility, before you run a program, before you offer a special event or anything like that. But you can't rely on insurance alone. So you need to do the insurance along with good risk management practices. So yeah, there's a lot of things to do, and the insurance company will want to know that you're using good risk management practices, because as I'm sure you all know, insurance companies like to not pay when they are supposed to, because it is a business. So talking about insurance, if you happen to have slide 40 open, it lists some of the types of insurance that are most likely purchased in recreation settings. And you can learn more about these in activity number, at one of the activities in the learning event, and from sources like the Insurance Bureau of Canada. So I'm just wondering, for those of you who have it open in front of you, if you look at some of the different types, maybe you can tell us one type of insurance that your organization has, if you know of it, and tell us how it actually transfers risk. And if you don't know, that's okay. I can go through these as well. So, Kelsey, I'll put you on the spot. We'll just go in the same order today. So sorry to put you on the spot again. But can you tell us one type of insurance that RPAY has and how it transfers risk?
We definitely have directors and officers insurance. I know that.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and it helps to protect the board.
That's right. It helps to protect the board so that your board aren't held personally liable. So I'll just pop in that. There's my definition. There's number three, just because I have them listed in order. But I just put that in the chat. So, Kelsey, that's a great example. Directors and officers insurance is very important, especially when you're dealing with nonprofits and community groups and people are volunteering their time. Tegan, are you familiar with a type of insurance that your organization has or someone in the past that you've worked for has had?
No.
Okay. Are you back at Skookum Gym?
Yes, I am. I'm actually in the office right now.
Awesome.
I haven't really inquired about it, but soon as we have vehicles here, I'm assuming we have auto insurance.
You do. So, because you drive people in your programs places, right?
Yeah.
Like, not you personally, but you probably have somebody who drives?
I drive.
Okay. So then you would want your organization, you don't want to use your own personal insurance from your vehicle. So your company or Skookum Gym needs to make sure that they have auto insurance that covers you and whatever, you as the driver and whatever vehicle it is that you're driving. Sometimes that insurance will also extend to rented vehicles as well if you have to rent something that's bigger. So that's a really good example. Tim, do you have an example of another type of insurance that either NWPRPA or someone else you've worked with would have to transfer that risk of liability? So riders on regular insurance coverage, exactly. So your regular insurance coverage, and I'll just pop this in the chat too, would be something like your general liability insurance. I would imagine that everybody's organization has that, and yes, it's gone up a lot in past years. And that's mostly the one that we've been talking about a lot, but there's also these other special types And Tim just mentioned sort of those riders on that insurance coverage. And again, I mentioned RPAY, and RPAY has that type of rider to cover contractors, which is pretty amazing because, you know, NWTRPA does not, and neither does RPAM. So that's a special thing that RPAY has on their general liability insurance. Another type that you guys might have come across is liquor liability insurance. And it might not apply to you, but you may have worked in like a municipal recreation facility, like Kelsey, maybe when you worked in Teslin, this was something that you would have, or a group using your facility would have had if they were running a licensed event. Kelsey, do you remember ever having this as a requirement in Teslin?
Yep. Like they have to give a liquor license, and then, yeah, there was something else about insurance that they had to get. I can't quite remember the details on it, though.
Yeah, so the license is one thing. It's the permission to sell it, and then the insurance is something that if something goes wrong because somebody's drunk, then it's special insurance, like for to cover that specific event, and to cover that group because they might be, you know, might be somebody having a wedding, for example, right? So, and they're not a formal group, so they wouldn't have general liability insurance. So if you have a group using your facility for, you know, alcohol-related events, then that's probably a good thing to make sure they have. The last one I just wanted to let you know about is something called errors and omissions. And that's insurance that provides coverage for a faulty performance of a service or a financial loss that results from advice provided. So can anyone think of an example of who might carry errors and omissions insurance? It might be somebody that your organization works with. Kelsey, any ideas of who or what type of company would carry this type of insurance?
Would accounting or bookkeeping services carry something like that?
Exactly. That's a really, really good example. So accountants would carry this because you can well imagine if they do something for your organization and your organization loses thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars because of it, then your organization could sue them. So this protects them in that type of lawsuit. It lets the insurance pick up the damages in that case because loss of money or a financial loss is a damage as well. A really good example. Tegan or Tim, can either of you think of another example of when errors and omissions insurance might be needed? Okay, well, let's move on then from insurance. So those are some examples of insurance. If anyone has any questions about insurance, feel free to pop them in the chat because I think you're all in there. So what we're going to do now is we're going to move on and review both sides of our case. We're a little limited with time, so I want to provide some time to discuss it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pose questions to the lawyers for the plaintiffs and then the questions to the lawyers for the defense. So I'm going to ask you sort of to explain your side that you have. I think all of you have already posted this. So, Kelsey, you'll go first, and then Tim and Tegan, you'll go second. And Tim, if you can't talk on the call because you're tied up, that's totally understandable as well. You can, I'll share the questions afterwards too. So let's go through the questions. And so, Kelsey, if you have your case in front of you, I will pop the questions in the chat. I'll put them in one at a time because it spaces them out better. Otherwise, they all run together in the chat. And you don't have to give out, some of these are a yes, no answer, so quick answer. So Kelsey, do you think Sundance owed a duty of care to Crocker? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, so they owed a duty of care. Here's my next question. And then we'll go to the defense after. So it's kind of like we're letting the plaintiff make their case first. So, Kelsey, since you said yes, the duty of care existed, do you have any comments on the standard of care that was required and whether or not that was met?
the standard of care would have or should have included things like making sure that the waiver was explained and understood that it was a legal document that they were signing, that they were reviewing the competition each year and making changes to it to ensure that it was safe to continue doing, that their bar servers were not over-serving their patrons, that if someone was injured in the race, that things like first aid were offered, and that they had a policy in place where participants could not participate in the event if they were obviously intoxicated or injured.
Awesome. So there's a lot of points in there about the standard of care and whether or not they met that. So the next question then to you is, did Sundance's failure to meet the standard of care cause the harm that was suffered? That's just a yes or no.
Yes.
Okay. And here's another question for you, and then we're going to come back to the defense. So, Tim, if you're in the chat and not able to talk, you can also pop these in when we come back to the defense. So, Kelsey, then the next question they would ask is, did Crocker voluntarily assume any risk?
He voluntarily assumed some risk, but not all.
Not all. Okay, awesome. Thank you. I think you've already answered this question, but I'll pop it in, and then Tegan and Tim know the questions that are coming up. Can Sundance rely on the waiver as a proper defense to the claim, like to the what Crocker is saying? Like, does the waiver stand up in court? What do you think, Kelsey?
No.
Okay. Perfect. And then last question is, what do you think that Crocker, remember you're the lawyer for the plaintiff right now, so do you think Crocker was contributory negligent?
Yes.
Okay. So imagine the jury would definitely probably say yes, but as a lawyer, what would you have to say if you were a lawyer for the plaintiff?
As a lawyer, I would say no.
There you go. Okay. So right now we got our lawyer hats on. So good. Okay. So we're going to go to Tegan and Tim. And Tim, maybe you can pop. I don't know if you're able to talk on the phone. It sounds like you're kind of doing multitasking there. So the first question, now Tegan and Tim, remember, you're the defense. So Tim, you can answer in the chat. And some of these are just a yes or no. And I'll ask Tegan to comment too. So if you're the defense, would you say, did Sundance owe a duty of care to Crocker? Tegan, what do you think, yes or no?
Yes.
Sorry, I missed that. Okay, so Tim said Sundance owed a duty of care to Crocker, but the duty of care was met in the standard of care. So, yes, as a lawyer for the defense, you might say, yes, it was a duty of care, but we did everything. So that's a great way of explaining it. Does that make sense, Tegan?
Yeah.
Okay, so you would agree with that. So that answers the next question. So if a duty existed, was the standard of care met? And so what were some of the things that Sundance did to show that they met the standard of care? Tim, maybe you can pop one in the chat. And Tegan, I know that you shared some of these in your post. So what did Sundance or the defendant do to show that they were, you know, being responsible?
Well, they repeatedly let him know that he was too intoxicated. And it was like not a good idea, especially he was injured already.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that's good. Like
a waiver, but
yeah.
Multiple times went to see him because they knew he was not able to do it, I guess.
Yeah, so you're right, and Tim's right, too. So if you were the defense, right? As a lawyer for defense, he would say, we met that standard of care. We had him sign a waiver. There was, like Tim pointed out, there's a pre-race meeting. Stephen, you pointed out, we repeatedly told him not to do it. Tim says there's good Hill supervision. Yeah, you guys, that is what the defense would say. No, we definitely met the standard of care through all of these different things. So you can see how two different sides to the story, right? So the next question then would be, and I think I know what the answer. So did failure to meet the standard of care cause the harm suffered? But what you would argue as the defense is there was no failure to meet the standard of care. So then they said that you weren't responsible for the harm. Does that make sense from a defense perspective, that you would say, we didn't fail to meet the standard of care? Does that make sense to you, Tegan? And Tim says correct, too.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So now the next question for lawyers for defense is, did Crocker voluntarily assume risk? Tegan, as a defense, if you're trying to, you know, protect the Sundown, would you say that Crocker voluntarily assumed risk?
Well, I'd say that he signed the waiver. He should have read it over, and he basically pulled a fit to continue with the sport. So,
Yeah. Yeah, and would you agree, Tim, too? You can pop yes or no in the chat if you've got a sec. Okay, so you can see what Tim said. He said, absolutely. Not only voluntarily, but he demanded to undertake the risk by insisting on racing after being asked not to. So absolutely, then, there was a really good argument that he voluntarily assumed the risk and demanded. I like that word. Thanks, Tim. Demanded. So then if you have that answer as the defense, would you say that Crocker was contributory negligent? Yes or no? What do you think, Tegan?
Could you repeat that?
So in other words, was Crocker responsible, his behaviors, were they responsible for the damage or the harm that he had that happened? So does the responsibility, were his behaviors a direct link to what happened, and he should take full responsibility for those, for the harm or the hurt that he sustained?
I think so, yes.
Excellent. Okay, great. Okay, so now you can see from what Chelsea shared and then from what Tim and Tegan shared, there's two sides to the story. You could argue, based on all these legal concepts, you could argue that Crocker was 100% responsible, or you could argue that Sundance was 100% responsible, or you could argue something in between. So now what I want you guys to do is get rid of those lawyer hats so you can throw them out the window. You're no longer a lawyer. You're now the jury. So all four, or I'll be the judge, and the three of you together are the jury. And so you've heard the different arguments, you've read what each other have posted, and now you're debating it and you're talking about it, and you have to make a recommendation to the judge. So let's just, if we can use the chat for this as well as your voices, that would be great, because it'll kind of give us a record of it. So the first question that as a judge I'm going to ask you is, I'm going to ask you, was there negligence? So just, you know, was somebody, doesn't matter who, was there negligence in this case? So just yes or no. Chelsea said yes. Tegan, yes or no. Tim says yes.
Yeah,
so all three of you agree that there was negligence. So once you've agreed, you'll remember way back to week one, once we agree there's negligence, then we ask the next question. If we agree that there's negligence, who is liable or responsible? So let me put that in the chat. This might take more than a one-word answer. So you can either pop your answer in the chat or tell me, or maybe even better, both. So Tim has said both parties are negligent and liable, so both Sundance and Crocker. Kelsey, what do you think? Oh, Sundance is?
I would say both.
Okay, and Tegan, what do you think?
I think both, too.
Okay, so you guys all agree that both of them, so there's some shared liability or responsibility. So the next question, we'll get Tim to pop his answer in the chat, but Kelsey and Tegan, you might want to talk about this one a little bit more. This is probably where a jury, if they were looking at this case, would take a little bit more time. So now, think about for a moment, what are your recommendations for the final settlement? So there's obviously damage. We know that there was negligence, and you guys have agreed that both parties are negligent or liable. Both parties were negligent, so there's negligence. Both parties are responsible for that negligence. So, Tim, go ahead and pop in the chat what your recommendations would be. Kelsey, what would your recommendations be for a final settlement?
Well, the way that I view this case is it's kind of like a 70-30 for responsibility, where Sundance was 70% responsible and the plaintiff was 30. So I would say that there would probably be some sort of financial settlement. What that would be, I have no idea. But yeah, I would say about 30% of it was the plaintiff's fault and about 70% of it was the defendant.
Awesome, and that's pretty close. I don't know if you can see what Tim posted in the chat. He said 35-65. So, you know, that you guys are thinking along the same lines. Stephen, what do you think? Do you think that if both of them are responsible, what should the settlement look like?
Well, for me, I would say 25-75, just because Sundance did all that they could, but they also partially at fault as well, because I guess they could have done more by refusing and calling security or something like that. But.
So 25 for the plaintiff, like the guy who got hurt, and 75 for Sundance? Okay. And Tim's just put another thing in here, so let's talk about this one. So Tim said, unless there are other parties that can be dragged in. So think about if you were to drag in other parties and make some other parties liable, who would they be? So Kelsey, any thoughts about who else could perhaps share some of this responsibility for what happened?
It could be Molson. You could definitely pull Molson Beer in because they were at the race and they did contribute to the over-serving of the plaintiff. So I think you probably could pull them in and give them anywhere from 5-10% of the
responsibility or liability, yeah. And they probably have the deepest pockets too for beer.
Yeah.
Tegan, what do you think? Do you think that there's anybody else who could help pay some of the damages?
I agree with Kelsey, but yeah, Molson, the employees, like the coach and stuff, could be part of it as well, I guess, I would say, or like the bartender.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because the employees, Sundance could turn around and say, well, our employees didn't follow our policies about serving liquor, and they could bring in their employees, and then you have personal liability as well, right? So that's definitely a really good point. Anyone else that you can think of, Tegan?
No.
Okay, and Tim said, like, the liquor serving companies like Molson, the tube manufacturer, any company contracted to do the grooming, any other contractors on the hill. So, you know, these are, like, definitely you can see how this would get complicated. But probably that liability, I'm not exactly sure how it would work, but they'd have to probably be named in the suit, or there'd be, like, an appeal or a countersuit or something that would bring those other ones in. But you guys you know, you can see how it gets complicated when you start to look at it. So what do you think? Maybe pop in your final, having heard all of your arguments, just imagine you're all sitting in a circle together and talking about this. What would you guys agree? Because obviously as a jury, you have to agree and tell the judge what you agree on. So let's go around again. What would you be comfortable with now that you've heard each other's discussion? So Kelsey, what would you be willing to sort of compromise at as far as a recommendation to the judge?
I think either I would probably go more in line with what Tim was suggesting and do the 35 to 65 in terms of responsibility or liability, unless the plaintiff's lawyers or the jury did decide to then pull in Molson, in which case I would suggest that we split it 30-60-10.
Okay, awesome. Tegan, how about yourself? Would you be comfortable with that, what Kelsey's suggesting, with a 35-65, unless Molson gets dragged in?
Yeah.
Okay, so the challenge for you guys as a jury then, Tim said that he believes in personal responsibility and would like to put more of an onus on the plaintiff. So would you be willing to recommend something a little slightly different? How about you, Kelsey?
In this case, I wouldn't, just because of how severely the plaintiff was injured.
Okay, so you're sort of sticking with a 35-65. How about you, Tegan? Okay. And Tim, are you comfortable with sticking with a 35-65? Just yes or no? Okay. And I heard a beep. Megan, did you join the call by any chance?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so we're just about at the end of the call. So maybe sort of listen through. We're just coming up with a decision on what should be recommended to the judge by the jury. So we've got one more question, so we'll kind of go around here. So my last question then that the jury would have to decide, and you started talking about this a little bit, is were there any other circumstances or arguments the lawyers did not consider? So, you know, you raised the issue of Molson was responsible. Tim said maybe contractors on the Hill. So those might be some other circumstances. Tim said maybe if proper mechanisms had been in place, you could even go with a judgment of 25% to 75%. Kelsey, can you think of any other arguments or circumstances that haven't been considered?
I think we've talked about all the ones that I can think of.
Okay. Tegan, anything else to add about circumstances or arguments that weren't considered as we approved this?
No.
Okay. Megan, I don't know if you want to jump in. It's hard to jump in halfway through, but is there anything that really stood out for you as being an important fact in this case?
Yeah, it's pretty hard. I honestly don't know what everyone else has talked about, but I feel like, I feel like the lack of, like, though there was duty of care, the lack of standard of care by the resort owner and the race marshal towards the plaintiff, I feel like wasn't held up to standard.
Mm-hmm.
By asking if he wanted to continue, they were acting on their duty of care and somewhat standard of care, but by ignoring the fact of how drunk he was, they weren't considering the standard of care as they should have been. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, exactly. And I think that if you read through people's posts like yours and the other ones that are posted, exactly. And at the beginning, earlier in the call, we talked about how you could, take either side, right? Like Kelsey was presenting from the lawyers for the plaintiff, and then you can really show how that standard of care wasn't upheld But then Tim and Tegan were talking about from the lawyers for the defense, and they could say, well, we did this, 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 and this. So it's interesting, the two arguments, right? So I think right now what we're trying to do is what they agreed to is I asked a couple of questions. Was there negligence? And everybody agreed yes. We said, if yes, who is liable or responsible? Everyone agreed that both of them, like the plaintiff and the defense, are liable. And then we're working on the recommendations for the settlement and if there's any other considerations. So Tim's not able to talk on the call, but he's popping a few things in the chat that I'll just read out to you guys. And then let's do another round because I want to see if we can come to some sort of an agreement that they recommend to the judge. So Tim's actually popped in here. Kelsey, I know I think you can see this. He's flipped it around now. He's saying that the defense, so Sundance, is only 25% responsible and the plaintiff is 75% responsible. So that's what he's suggesting, whereas I think Kelsey and Tegan, you guys were saying the defense should be 65% responsible and the plaintiff 35%. So that's pretty different. Tim says the lack of security is a major oversight on behalf of Sundance, and who's the defendant. A security team in place would have prevented most of this, as would better staff training and documentation on how to manage intoxicated clients. So let's do one more round, and let's see if, imagine you're sitting in a back room of a courthouse and you guys are all the jury. Let's see if we can come to an agreement on what the final settlement recommendation should be. So Kelsey, having heard what Megan added, and what Tim has posted in the chat, what would you suggest for your final recommendations?
Like in terms of what the plaintiff would actually receive?
Yeah, or how it would be split. Because I think you guys have agreed that both the plaintiff and the defendant have some responsibility in this. And now, last time you said 65% was the defendant, and 35 was the plaintiff, and Tim's got that he likes that too. So I think we've got some going back and forth, and that's the whole part of the conversation, right? So how do you feel? Do you still feel that the 35% for the plaintiff, the person who was injured, and 65 for the defense is fair?
Yep.
Okay. How about you, Tegan?
Can you repeat that?
Yeah, do you feel like after our conversation that 35% of the responsibility on the plaintiff and 65% of the responsibility on the defense is fair?
Yeah.
Okay, Megan, any thoughts about that? Do you agree with that or disagree, or do you have any other circumstances that should be considered?
No, I think I agree.
Okay. Awesome. So we've got an agreement. Way to go, you guys. You've got a jury agreement. So then as a jury, you would recommend to the lawyer or to the judge that the plaintiff looks after 35% of that and the defense 65. So Tim's got yay, no mistrial, right? Because the jury agrees. So next question, and I actually don't have this written down, but I'm just curious. In this day and age, because this court case is actually 20 or 30 years old, in this day and age, what do you think the settlement amount should be, the total amount? Kelsey, any ideas what you think the total amount would likely be in this day and age? There's no right or wrong answer to this one.
I would guess between 5 and 10 million.
Okay, so 5 and 10 million. Tegan, any guesses?
No.
No, it's hard to guess in this day and age. Tim's got 2.5 million. Megan, any guesses in this day and age what the settlement might be for something like this?
Honestly, I was not going to say that much. I was probably going to say like 300,000.
Okay. So when you say 300,000, would that be the total amount and then it would be split 65-35? Or would the 300,000 be what the plaintiff receives?
No, I was going to say that's what they would split.
Okay.
So lots of variation in, you know, and I think that would ultimately be up to the judge. I'm not sure if the jury recommends the actual amount or not. I could be wrong there. I haven't sort of read through that part of it. But let's say we, it's a really nice even $1 million just for the sake of math. So that would mean that the plaintiff would actually get $650,000. So obviously the plaintiff doesn't pay himself the 35%. So that means if the $1 million is a settlement, then the plaintiff receives the 65% that you guys have said the defense should be responsible for. Does that make sense to everybody? Kelsey, yes, no? Keegan, does that make sense how that's the final amount and then the percentage amount?
Yeah.
Okay. And Megan, that makes obviously that makes sense to you too, right?
Yes.
Great. So that's pretty interesting. But now I'm sure you guys would like to know the actual outcome. So again, keep in mind this was a court case from, I can't quite recall the date, but I have a feeling it's at least 25 years old. So you know, I don't know if this would actually happen in this day and age. I think that court cases like this one changed the standard of practice around alcohol consumption and use and serving and things like that. So it is an older court case, but it's still a really, it's, they actually use it still for teaching purposes and learning purposes. So let me take a moment and I'm just going to wrap up and tell you what actually happened. So, as you know, Crocker sued Sundance because he had these serious injuries and he needed some money to keep going. The trial judge found in favor of Crocker, so kind of like you guys, in the amount of $200,000, so pretty close to what, Megan, you just said. Both Crocker and Sundance weren't happy with that, so they appealed to the Ontario Court of Appeal, who overturned the trial judge. So 8 years later, it had gone to the Supreme Court of Canada, and the Supreme Court of Canada restored the original ruling. So kind of like 8 years have gone by without it being finalized, just to have the Supreme Court of Canada say, no, that you did the right ruling in the first place. So a little bit, of time lag there. What the Supreme Court said is that there was a direct relationship that required Sundance to take care to prevent foreseeable harm to Crocker, and that the Sundance Spring Festival was a promotional event that charged a fee. So there's another key piece to compete. And they also earned money at the bar from selling Crocker alcohol. So the court said that the resort or Sundance owed Crocker a reasonable measure of care to prevent him from harming himself. He engaged in a dangerous event, but was also able, as you've all said, to buy drinks at the resort's bar. And on top of it, he was wearing his competitor's bib. So the people serving him should have seen that he was a competitor and not a spectator. So at different times and locations, the people who were working there could see Crocker was in a vulnerable condition and that he was participating in a dangerous competition, but they still allowed him to compete. So Sundance was negligent because they set up a competition that was inherently dangerous. So it was already dangerous, but then they let somebody who was drunk compete on top of it, and that caused the injuries. The court also said that Crocker voluntarily assumed this risk of injury when he signed away his rights to sue Sundance in the waiver. The court said he did not voluntarily assume the risk because the waiver did not hold up in court. And the reason why is because his state of mind was clouded by alcohol at the time. And so you cannot sign a waiver if you're not in the right state of mind. So that's something that we all need to keep in mind if we're using waivers. People have to have clear judgment and be in the right state of mind at that point in time. So that signature didn't relieve Sundance of its liability for negligent conduct because the ski resort failed to draw Crocker's attention to it. And they didn't even make sure that he read the waiver properly in the release in there. Crocker definitely contributed to his own injury by negligence. He chose not to read or ask about what he signed and initialed. He chose to get drunk. That was his own choice. And he chose to recklessly compete in a dangerous competition. And he stubbornly waved off the interventions that people were trying to put in place. As Tim said, he demanded to participate. But had he withdrawn from the race, he wouldn't have sustained those injuries. So the final thing that they came up with was they said that the plaintiff was 25% contributory negligent and the defendant Sundance was 75%. So you guys were super close. I'm really impressed with how you came up with that. And then they got the final net award of $200,000. So it was higher than that. So, you know, Megan, you're right around the right amount with your $300,000 estimate. So I just want to do one more round to see if you have any final thoughts or questions about this case, or I'm also curious to find if you, to hear if you found that it was a helpful way to learn a little bit more about legal risk. So Kelsey, can I put you on the spot again? Any final thoughts about RM-103, this court case, or anything that we've covered in the last 4 weeks?
I thought it was an interesting court case to review because it is really relevant to what a lot of people working in recreation might possibly come across. And I found the course really helpful.
That's great. Thanks, Kelsey. I appreciate your feedback. Tegan, any thoughts about the court case or how it worked to apply what you've been learning to this type of case?
It was very informative. It's interesting that there was all those little details they looked at. Would have never thought, but I learned a lot.
Yeah, it's amazing, eh? It makes you think about all those details when you're running your programs and things like that. So there's a lot of detail out there. Thanks, Tegan. Thanks for sharing. Tim has said case studies are a great way to look at this kind of learning, especially one that mimics an actual event, and this was an actual event. There's actually, I'll share with you the results, and there's a hyperlink at the bottom, and if you want to read more court cases and what happened, there's a whole database full of them, so it's kind of interesting to look at some of those. Tim said it was nice to work through the cases as a lawyer and also as a jury so that you could look at both sides of the argument. Megan, I know you joined late, but just to not put you on the spot or anything like that, any thoughts about how the case worked for you, about legal risk or anything else that you'd, anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, I actually really had fun with it. However, it's kind of hilarious because I went in with, as defending for the plaintiff, but I was, or no, yeah, did I? I don't know. Anyways, I immediately thought that he was negligent, so I was immediately like, oh, man, I picked the wrong side. But it was interesting to notice that it was actually, it was his fault. It wasn't his fault. Anyways. I argued the right side, and it was kind of hilarious to hear the end results, so I thought it was, like, a really fun little activity.
That's great. Thanks. And I think it's also a really good example. Sometimes we think it's black and white, right? Like you said, I think we think that, you know, in these court cases, it's only one or the other that's responsible, but this idea of different people being responsible, and even as all of you brought in the idea about maybe Molson's responsible, and they're the ones with the deepest pockets. So I think it's interesting to see how that pans out. So thanks for sharing that, Megan. You guys did a really good job with that. I'm really happy with how that went, and thank you for participating in the conference call. Those of you on the call don't have any more writing to do for this course, and as long as you've finished your other RLAs, which would have been the first and the second one, and I'll let you know if you haven't. As long as you finish those, then you've absolutely completed RM-103, which means that no more learning events until after Christmas. So please take a few moments, if you can, to fill out the feedback form. It's at the end of the learning event I'll just tell you what activity number it is. It's activity number 13. I did change, this used to be a 2-week learning event, and I changed it to 4 weeks. So your feedback and your thoughts about it are really helpful for me to move forward and see, you know, did I get it a bit better this time by making some adjustments? So thank you so much. And I look forward to reconnecting with all of you in the new year after the Christmas season. We start with BF-102 proposal writing on January 10th. So if you have any proposals that you're going to need to write between January and March, bring those topics with you, because this one is a more it's learning about proposal writing, but it's also you get the chance to develop one as you go through it. So I know you're going to be tied up with Christmas, but keep that in the back of your mind somewhere if you want to. So I'd like to wish all of you guys all the best for the holidays, and maybe we'll just do an around just to wrap up our circle and our 2021 year. So Kelsey, any final wishes or thoughts for everybody?
Happy holidays, stay warm and stay safe.
Thanks, Kelsey. Tegan?
Thank you. I hope you have a good Christmas.
You too, especially with little ones. So have fun. Megan, any final thoughts or wishes?
Happy holidays, everybody. I hope you have a good break.
You too, and I hope you get lots of decent weather to get out on the land as well so that it's not too cold. And Tim says, fun to work with you all through this learning event. Well done, everyone. Happy holidays, and may you find some snow. I think you have to go to Whitehorse for that, Tim. I've been away for a week, and Kelsey tells me it's been snowing every day. So it's a little further west than you. Okay, well, thanks, everybody. Is it? Awesome. I'm looking forward to coming home and going skiing. So, okay, well, I'm going to stop the conference call recording, and if anybody has anything else, feel free to stay on after I've stopped the call. Otherwise, all the best for the holidays. Take care.